Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. A new study out of BYU, Princeton, and Portland State shows that women speak less in meetings when they're outnumbered by men. So what does this mean for problem solving in the boardroom, or even for our democracy? And how can group dynamics be adjusted to empower women to speak up? Today on the program, we're talking about gender inequality in the group and what the study means for women serving on school boards or in the legislature or in corporate settings. Joining me in studio is Chris Karpowitz. He's an assistant professor of political science and the associate director of the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at Brigham Young University. His paper, Gender Inequality in Deliberative Participation, is in the August issue of the journal American Political Science Review, and he joins me in studio. Professor Karpowitz, welcome. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us, Jennifer Smith. She is an executive vice president and director of Zions Bank Corporation's corporate banking operations. Prior to joining Zions, she was an executive at Wells Fargo Bank. And Jennifer Smith joins me in studio as well. Jennifer, good morning to you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And you can find a link to the article on our website, kcpw.org. Later on in the program, we turn to getting schools, churches, governments, and other groups to work together to solve community problems. We're hearing about the collective impact approach to community problem solving. But first, gender and the group. If you've been the only woman in a group setting, do you feel you have influence or feel free to share your voice? Why do you think women clam up when they're outnumbered by men? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Chris Karpowitz, I want to start with you. What's a political scientist doing studying gender inequality anyway?
That's a good question. Well, I think inequality is an important political issue, and it's the extent to which men and women are willing to speak up and state their views, especially in public meetings about issues of political importance or public importance, that's politics. And so I think we see it around us all the time.
Mm. Set up the experiment that you conducted for us. I mean, what were you trying to study?
Well, we were really interested in how men and women talk together about political issues. And so we recruited volunteers both here in Utah and in New Jersey to participate in our study. And we randomly assigned those volunteers to different kinds of groups. Some groups had more women than men, and other groups had more men than women.
How big were the groups?
About five people in each group. And we had groups ranging from those composed only of men to composed only of women. And we asked the groups to meet together and to talk about some important political issues about how to take care of the poor, for example, how to care for those who might be struggling in a society. And we asked them to make some decisions together. And we randomly assigned some of the groups to decide by majority rule and some of the groups to decide by unanimity.
Consensus building, is that?
That's
another?
Right. That's right. Under unanimity, every voice matters, every vote counts, and so that's a little different from majority rule, where the majority can win even over the objections of the minority.
So, what did you find?
Well, we found that under majority rule, when women are outnumbered, they speak dramatically less than men. The average woman in the group speaks much less than the average man in the group. Two-thirds of the amount that the average man in the group might speak. And that participatory deficit has important effects on how the group members see each other. So I think we've all been in groups where the least talkative member says the most important thing that influences everybody else in the group. But we found that that's really the exception, that in most groups, the more you talk, the more influential you're seen in the group. And so when women speak less under majority rule, when they're outnumbered and they speak less, they are seen as less influential. They're less able to move the group in the directions that they prefer.
Hmm. Jennifer Smith, I invited you because I really want that first-person experience to either validate what Professor Karpowitz found or to dispute it. Does any of this ring true to you as a woman who's been in the boardroom for years?
I've been really fortunate in my experience. I've always felt comfortable and safe sharing my opinion. But I certainly have been in situations where I am the only woman who is in a room with many other men. And I speak up often, and perhaps that's the reason I've been more successful, is if there's a perception of more influence around someone who speaks up. I often, though, do see women, and sometimes men, who are quiet and are probably viewed as less influential than really what they really have to contribute to the dialogue and to the discussion.
So you have felt like speaking up matters?
Absolutely. In my previous role at Zions, I was the chief auditor of the company, and I was paid to share my opinion with the board. So my situation might be unique. The speaking up, though, certainly changes the outcome. When Professor Karpowitz shared that sometimes it's the quiet person who doesn't speak a lot, and all of a sudden they have this nugget of wisdom that changes the trajectory of a conversation and changes the outcome. I often think about, if women speak up more often, how does that change the outcomes, not only in our company, in our companies, but in our communities?
Professor Karpowitz, I mean, how did you and your colleagues, you collaborated with someone from Princeton as well as someone from Portland State on this research. How did you react to the data, to the outcomes?
Well, we found them both discouraging and with some signs of hope. So it was discouraging for us to see that women are participating so much less under certain conditions. So when the group is deciding by majority rule, there is this huge participatory deficit for women, for the average woman in the group. But the nugget of hope is that the group level conditions can remedy those problems. So when you add more women to the group under majority rule, that seems to help women. And the average woman then speaks in groups with many women, the average woman speaks as much as the average man. Or another thing you could do is change the decision rule. So under unanimity, even women who are outnumbered tend to speak almost as much as the men in the groups. So those group level conditions seem to make a big difference. How we structure the group, in other words, matters for what happens in the group, for the dynamics of the deliberation that goes on within the group.
Speaking with Chris Karpowitz, he's an assistant professor of political science and the associate director of the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at BYU. We're talking about his recent paper in the journal American Political Science Review titled Gender Inequality in Deliberative Participation. Also with us in studio, Jennifer Smith, Executive Vice President and Director of Zions Bank Corporation's Corporate Banking Operations. And you can join our conversation. We're talking about women in the group, women's contributions, women's voices in group settings, and what that means for decision making. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Jennifer Smith, you mentioned that you have been the only woman in many meetings. How different are the discussions when you're not the only woman, when there are several women in a group setting? I mean, does that change the dynamic at all?
It does. It does change the dynamic, especially when it's more equal. So it needs to get to a place of balance. It does change the conversation. Sometimes I find that the conversation goes deeper. There's more curiosity that often appears in the meetings. If I could share a story, a few years ago, we were interviewing a group of MBA graduates for a very competitive program. In a full day of interviews, they have several activities they have to go through. And one of those activities is in a group setting, working through a Harvard Business case study to solve a problem. And in that particular setting, there were four men and one woman. And I sat back and watched the interaction. Three of the men were very, very active. One of the men and one of the women were quiet, were very quiet. I really wanted both of those individuals to speak up and influence the outcomes. But what was most meaningful was there was one gentleman who reached out to those two individuals and sought their opinion. And they had the answers to those questions. And because they participated, it changed the outcome. It also resulted in that individual having higher leadership marks than any of the other people because he sought out other people's input to reach a conclusion. And those who were really aggressive didn't fare as well.
Professor Karpowitz, I mean, when women tend to be silent in these discussions, I mean, is it a matter of self-confidence? Is it self-censorship? And is it just, as Jennifer mentioned, I mean, is it just take one person to reach out and say, hey, I want to hear what you have to say?
Yeah, I think what Jennifer says is really important because one of the things we find is that in different kinds of groups, different kinds of norms are established within the group. That is, the group seems to interact in different sorts of ways. And having more women in the group, for example, tends to result in a norm in which the group is more supportive, there's more positive interaction, more supportive interjections, saying, yeah, oh yeah, that's a good idea, those sorts of things. And we find that as the number of women in the group increases, men change in that same move in that direction, right? They're saying more positive sorts of things. So the norm that the group creates together makes a big difference. And that can be established in a variety of ways. You asked about confidence. Confidence seems to matter quite a bit for women. Women face a confidence deficit relative to men. That's true in our study, and it's also true in national studies, nationally representative samples of men and women. And we find that certain kinds of groups really help women who don't feel as confident. The kinds of groups I was just describing that give positive support and affirmative interactions with one another. That doesn't mean that everybody in the group has to agree with one another. That's not the case. But establishing a dynamic and a norm in the group in which each person's opinions are valued is really quite important. And as Jennifer says, this can affect the outcome of the group in important ways. Because one of the things we find is that when women speak, they're not just saying the same thing as men. They have their own perspectives and own unique takes on important subjects. And when they don't speak, we're losing something important in the group.
You also write in the study that culturally, men enjoy a higher status in masculine subjects. Well, what are masculine subjects?
Yeah, it's interesting. We find that when we survey men and women, nationally, that women tend to tell us that they care more about issues like the family, the well-being of children, education, the poor, the needy, whereas men seem to talk more, have priorities more about spending and taxes and those sorts of things. So that's not true of every man and every woman. There's diversity within the genders as well, but those are the general trends that we find. And so when women speak more, they do tend to talk more about the needs of the poor or those who are disabled or otherwise struggling, the needs of children. So when we talk about men's perspectives and women's perspectives, those are the kinds of things we're thinking about.
Chris Karpowitz, an assistant professor of political science and the associate director of the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at BYU. His article, Gender Inequality in Deliberative Participation, is in the August issue of the journal American Political Science Review. Jennifer Smith is also with us. She's executive vice president and director of Zions Bank Corporation's corporate banking operations, and we're talking about gender inequality in group settings. If you'd like to join our conversation, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. There's just one woman on the 7-member Salt Lake City Council. There's also just one woman serving on the 9-member Salt Lake County Council. In fact, women are outnumbered by men in just about every decision-making body and legislative committee across the state. And that's why new research coming out of BYU is a bit disturbing. The study shows that women contribute to discussions less when they're outnumbered by men in the group. So today on the program, we're talking about this study and how to more fully engage women in institutional and decision-making settings. Joining me in studio, Chris Karpowitz. He's an assistant professor of political science at BYU. He's one of the authors of the study, Gender Inequality in Deliberative Participation. Also with us, Jennifer Smith, Executive Vice President and Director of Zions Bank Corporation's Corporate Banking Operations. And if you'd like to join us, if you've been the only woman in a boardroom or a community meeting, do you feel like you were able to contribute? You can give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Jennifer, do you have any practical suggestions to make women feel more empowered to speak up? I mean, you mentioned this case where somebody reached out and specifically said, hey, I want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear your opinion. Other ideas just from your experience on making women feel more empowered to speak.
The research itself is enlightening. Just having the awareness that we aren't speaking up as often as we need to can start to change, can change our behaviors from the start.
Do you have a meeting later today? You're going to speak up more?
I'm going to speak up a lot more. That hasn't been too much of a problem. But I encourage women to think about the outcome of how their participation can change the direction and the responsibility that we have to change the direction, whether it's just in our team meetings or with it's in a larger community meeting. Our participation results in better decision making. And just taking that first step, having enough courage to step forth and raise our hand and share an opinion, it gets better after the first time. And others can help by showing that they value that input. Because we need each other to be successful, men or women, in affirming the value of one another's input. Mm.
Professor Karpowitz, I'm wondering, you had these experiments, these test groups, at like 97 test groups. And you had different numbers of women in some groups and in others. So what happened if a man was the only man in the group? I mean, how did that change the group dynamic? Did he speak less like a solitary woman in a group would have?
That's a great question. The solitary man under majority rule spoke more than the solitary woman under majority rule.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? It does seem to be that the nature of the group and the group dynamic that gets formed is really quite important. And men seem sort of less vulnerable to these issues of confidence, right? They seem to be willing to kind of speak up no matter what they might worry that other members of the group would say. They're just more willing to do that, or at least the average man is. Again, there's diversity within both genders.
Sure.
And when we look under unanimous rule, then men seem to take the signal from unanimous rule that all voices are matter, that all voices matter as a signal to speak even more than we might otherwise expect. So they're really speaking a great deal as the solitary man or even one or two men in a group of five.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, let's get our callers involved in the conversation. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We're talking about women and group discussions with Chris Karpowitz. He's an assistant professor of political science at BYU, and Jennifer Smith, executive vice president and director of Zions Bank Corporation's corporate banking operations. Let's go to Alita calling from South Jordan. Alita, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a fascinating conversation, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to call in.
Sure. Go right ahead.
You know, I am fascinated by what Chris Karpowitz is saying. I believe I've been both of those women, the one who wouldn't speak up, the one who would listen and sit there quietly, but very much now the other one who is the center of every crucial conversation, who is not going to let issues pass by without kind of weighing in on that discussion. And
what changed you, Alita?
I am a civic leader. I've run for 6 races in Utah, but I have run into this attitude that's so predominant that we want the man in the white suit and tie, that's who we're going to trust, no matter what their experience, what their background, no matter what they're missing in knowledge. Sometimes that man will be chosen over that woman. And so I think as a society, we've really got to sit up and pay attention to how we're evaluating situations, because we do need the collaborative strength and the intelligence and the work ethic of the women in our society.
Alita, thanks very much for those thoughts. I appreciate it. Jennifer Smith, I mean, the man is the authority figure. The suit and tie, as Alita mentioned. I mean, you probably have encountered that in the corporate setting.
Absolutely. We tend to defer a lot to the man in the suit and tie. But what about the woman in her power suit who has as much to contribute as the man? And we have the opportunity to stand up and be noticed. And I applaud Alita for the action that she's taken to participate in her community. What a great role model for all of us.
So is it the appearance, though, or is it the willingness to jump into the fray? I mean, culturally, you know, socially, if we have this image as an authority figure, how can a woman compete with that?
Oh, I think it's presence, showing up with confidence and presence, walking into a meeting with a good stride, being well prepared, showing up, looking as professional as the man in his suit. It's how we show up that makes a difference. And again, I go back to the comments that the professor made about just sometimes how often we speak has a perception of influence. Contributing starts to shift the needle on how we're viewed.
Professor, your thoughts on Alita's comments?
Yeah, those are great comments. I appreciate Alita calling in. It's certainly the case that in our study and in other studies we've looked at across the country, that it's not a matter of women not having anything to say. It's not that they're being quiet because they don't know what to say or they don't have an opinion on the subject. I see this in my classes all the time, that sometimes I have to reach out specifically to women and say, I need to hear from the women in the room. And wow, the whole conversation turns because they've got great insights and really important contributions to make. The thing that I think our study adds is that we do have some control over the conditions of the group. And so if we're really worried about women not speaking up as much, one thing we can do is try to get more women into those meetings. If they're deciding by majority rule, for example, we need more women in the meeting to raise their voices, and we just need more women present at the meeting. The other thing we can do is think about the rules by which the meeting takes place. Is this a group that's just going to decide strictly by majority rule? Is it going to try to create consensus of some sort? Are there going to be other dynamics or other rules of the group that will really help women to participate more? And those are things we have control over. We don't have to just say, well, women aren't participating as much and we just have to live with that. So in addition to women showing up and being assertive and confident, all of those things are incredibly important. We ought to also be thinking about the nature of the group, the purpose of the meeting, how we're going to structure the group, what its decision rules might be. Those are really important political choices that we make as a society in terms of how we're going to make group decisions.
Jennifer Smith, I'd be interested to see, have you ever been in a board meeting or whatever where it was consensus-based, where you had to come out feeling united in the decision that you've made? Or has it always been the majority rule?
Yeah, rarely are board decisions consensus-based. It's majority rule, absolutely.
Sure. Well, I guess for you, Chris Karpowitz, I mean, how practical is it to expect a corporate board meeting to be consensus-based, or a community meeting to be consensus-based, a city council decision to be consensus-based, when you infuse politics and all of the, you know, the baggage that comes with that?
Sure. The decision to move to consensus or to unanimity comes with a variety of other implications, and we ought to pay attention to all of those. And my guess is most of the time our decisions will be made by majority rule. But we can certainly see groups in real life that make decisions by consensus or by unanimity. The jury is a great example of that. And there's a situation where every vote matters, every voice matters. And what we hope is that will lead to a more balanced and a better decision emerging. So we're certainly not advocating that every group turn to unanimity as its decision rule, but we are advocating that groups, that people who are thinking about group discussion consider how to structure that group. And if we're really worried about women's voices, and there's reason to be, then all the more reason to think about the way that group comes together and the decision rules it's going to use, the norms that the group creates. In some of our other work, we argue that it's not necessary every time to have strict unanimity. Some of the things that Jennifer was talking about before matter a great deal. Just having a norm in which the group members reach out to each other and think about patterns of participation, making sure that all voices are heard sufficiently. Those are substitutes for unanimity that can lead to the same kinds of outcomes.
Hmm. Why did you focus on gender? I mean, I'm thinking of community meetings where there's one African American or there's one Latino. Why focus on men and women?
That's a great question. We're interested in all sorts of group dynamics and in different ways that groups can be structured. So we're certainly interested in the question of race and ethnicity. And I think that's one of the questions to which we're going to turn next in our research. We started with gender because we got interested in this subject several years ago and started reanalyzing some data from other academics. And we found these gender inequalities that the original studies hadn't noticed. And so we thought, well, it's time to really study this more rigorously and to look at a rigorous experiment with random assignment to conditions and random assignment to decision rules and really try to get at this mechanism, what's happening with gender in the group.
Do you think, I mean, Jennifer Smith, you just read this study and you say it will perhaps influence or inform how you act in the future. Do you think that men as a group are sensitive to to inclusion and to finding out more? I mean, when you're the only woman in the boardroom, are people reaching out to you?
I do think men are interested in better outcomes. And the increasing awareness around the group participation and involving others in the decision-making process, that understanding that will produce better decisions, I think men and women having this awareness will start to shift how they involve others.
But how, if it's a matter of numbers, if it's getting more women into the boardroom, how are we making progress on that count? We've got a woman Secretary of State. We have women in key positions, but yet, you know, 20 of the Fortune 500 women CEOs are women. I mean, only 20 out of 500.
Right. I think we've lost ground, in fact, over the last few years. So no, we're not making a lot of headway in participation at the board level, in Congress, and in other forums. We need to make a lot more progress in that space.
Chris Karpowitz, I mean, how do you, cast the net wide, encourage more women to run for political office? I mean, there has been quite a bit of discussion here in this state about getting women to run for public office, but it's not an easy sell. How can you sweeten the deal?
Well, I think what Jennifer was saying before is really important. That is, the outcomes matter here. And if we care about the outcomes, the gender composition does make a difference. And so we need more women like our caller Alita who are willing to throw their hats into the ring and understand that if they don't speak up, important perspectives will be lost. And so I think it's a matter of encouraging, of helping women to feel more confident about sharing their opinions, about standing up as leaders in front of a large group or a small group, helping them have the confidence to know that their voices are needed and their perspectives will make a difference when they're shared.
The implications of this research, what do you think this all means?
Well, I think it means that we have to pay attention to these issues. I hope that as people see the results of this study, they'll recognize, one, that there is an issue, that women are not participating as much as they might, at least under some conditions. Second, I hope that we'll pay attention to the conditions under which we come together in groups. We'll pay attention to the gender composition of the group, and maybe we need to go recruit a few more women to attend those meetings or to be part of the decision-making structure. And that also involves thinking about the way we're going to make the decision. What are the decision rules? What does the leader of the group do? Does he or she reach out, as Jennifer was talking about before, to others in the group and try to bring them into the conversation? As I've said already, we certainly find that women have something important to share. And it's not the case that they're just being quiet because they don't have opinions. They do. And those opinions can move the group in important ways.
Jennifer Smith, I'll give you the final word. I mean, what does this mean for, what do you think this would mean for women in a business setting?
We all have to take responsibility for our own development and impact. That may mean participating more. It may mean when we show up for a meeting, working the room and saying hello. It may be inviting other women to join that conversation to change the number who are participating in the meeting. But we can change these dynamics.
I want to get one last caller in. This is Jim calling from Salt Lake City. Jim, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is such a vital subject to me. For 10 years, I've done a corporate governance conference in Salt Lake City called the Green River Conference on Corporate Governance. This year's conference is actually tomorrow, and one of the key subjects that we'll address is women on boards. Our keynote speaker will be Vivian Lee, the Senior Vice President of Health Science at the University of Utah. And we have three panels that will address questions related to greater diversity on corporate boards of directors, including minorities and women. And we will have a role play that specifically addresses how a woman could go to her boss to say, I would like to have some extra time so that I can serve on this corporate board where I've been invited to serve.
Jim, why do you think it's important to have those women's voices and to actually encourage them to speak?
Because in my view, the greater diversity of voices leads to better decisions. The Facebook company is a classic example. Half of Facebook's customers are women, and yet when they came out and went public, there were no women on that board of directors. So there's a board of directors that was that had a deaf ear to a whole segment of experience, of perspective that they should have had. And hopefully they'll correct that. Other boards are doing that, I think, more and more. If you get a diversity of views around the board table, you'll get better decisions.
Jim, thanks very much for the call, and we're going to have to leave it there. Chris Karpowitz, an assistant professor of political science and the associate director for the Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy at BYU. His article, Gender Inequality in Deliberative Participation, is in the August issue of the journal American Political Science Review. Chris Karpowitz, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Jennifer Smith, Executive Vice President and Director of Zions Bank Corporation's Corporate Banking Operations. Jennifer, it's been great to have you here as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
And you can find links to that article on our website, kcpw.org. Coming up next, a team approach to community problem solving. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.